United America Network presents The Joy of Democracy, hosted by Riverside County Democratic Party Chair Joy Silver. Now, here's Joy.
Welcome to The Joy of Democracy. On this episode of Abroad Talks to a Bro,
I'm quite excited to have our guest today. We have been talking about things for a long time, but today we have a subject that is very dear to my heart. And this is the situation before I introduce him. Let me say this. Women today are continuing to fight for civil rights that they should have had I don't know how long ago. We actually gained some. And don't we see the problem? Don't we see the problem? They want to put us, and they, meaning the patriarchy, guess what? They're going to hold on to all the power that they have as hard as they can. And how does that patriarchy get its support? The idea of what is feminine and what is masculine and what are the roles for women and what are the roles for men, that is what we're going to talk about today. He is an author, editor, and journalist. He's a writer of novels, stay-at-home father, has two daughters, not one, but two daughters, immigrant family, and you can see him. You can read him on Medium, see him on Blue Sky and Substack. And the best part from my perspective, he believes in women, Walter Ryan. Walter, thank you for coming on our show today.
Gosh, thank you so much for that lovely introduction. It's so great to see you, Joy. It's been a while, so I appreciate that we have this time to talk.
I certainly do, too. I'm going to go back to something. It's not that far in the past. Every day is so monumental in the amount of material that we are bludgeoned with from the opposition, from who, the erstwhile leader of the country. But this is something that Michelle Obama said recently, and I think it was on November 14th. And in an interview, in a conversation with Tracy Ellis Ross at the Brooklyn Academy of Music, she was asked, will she run for president? Will she run to be president of these United States? And she said, Americans don't want a woman to be president. And that's why don't look at her to run for the presidency. Don't look at her to be in the nation's highest office. Don't waste my time, she said. And here's the kicker. We got a lot of growing up to do, and there are still, sadly, a lot of men who feel like they cannot be led by a woman, and we saw it. I think we still have growing to do in that regard. Walter, what do you think about what Michelle Obama had to say?
Too often, I think the Democrats, they resign themselves to a hard reality that we don't have to accept. And if they think the reality is that Americans won't vote for a woman, then that is our obligation to change that. And we should be changing that by going out and talking. We shouldn't just accept that and say that's just the way it is, so we shouldn't run women. That's offensive to me. We need to create a country that then does elect women. That shows us what the problem is. I would love Michelle Obama to be president. Oh my gosh, that almost makes me cry just thinking about it right now. But it hurts my heart that she would say that she doesn't think the country would vote for her, because I think they would. And I don't know where these messages are coming from. I was talking to people today, and what we've seen is on the right, there's this constant, they don't just campaign over the course of 2 or 3 months. They don't depend on a 90-minute debate to make their point. They campaign year-round, and the Democrats need to do that too.
You know, that's an interesting thing, because the opposition plays a very long game. And in that game, they take every piece of the subject, and the subject matter is power. How do you gain power? And how do you gain power over others? So there's many pieces to this idea of gaining that power. And one of them is exactly this: defining womanhood, defining masculinity. And what is amazing to me, and what are the pitfalls of this, when I see, for example, in films where there are women heroes, or sheroes, as my feminist friends like to say, we see women in the same roles that men have had as heroes and as the protagonists in films and series and in books, and it's about violence. It's about violence. And so what I'm thinking, Walter, and I want to get your kind of views on this, how does the culture support currently what the definition of masculinity is, and what are the pitfalls of that?
What you're saying is so interesting. Yeah, it's long been the case. You can't just take a male character and give him a woman's name, and now all of a sudden you're writing a feminist novel. That's just not the case. But I think what's really upsetting is the degree to which all narratives in this country are controlled. And the same media that fails to adequately report the number of women who are dying because of the denial of reproductive health care. I mean, it really frustrates me that we have Democratic politicians. They should be out interviewing the families of these people because people are dying. And the media is just simply not covering this. Women are bleeding out because doctors are afraid to do these treatments that are needed to save their lives. And it's because our entire structure is controlled by the same groups. There's the consolidation. It went from Big Five to Big Four to Big Three publishing. And they're all owned by the same conglomerates that own the media. And I've, for the last few years, I've gone out and read independently published books. And on Substack, I try to interview people that never get their voices heard on the mainstream media. And it's just this, because if you watch the news, it's always the same exact, everybody looks exactly the same. Even the people they go and interview on the street all look the same. They control, and we only get this tiny little slice of what life is like in the United States. There's millions of people that never get to have their stories told. Once you start talking to those people, we overcome the illusions of what we think are differences between us, and we start seeing how we're the same, and things start making sense. And things only are chaotic and dystopian because we're forced to constantly consume this inaccurate representation of our world. And we got to break through that and give a greater platform to more marginalized voices.
And it's an interesting thing what you're saying there. The marginalized voices, because I've heard people who basically share our values that our machine, our political machine, has gone too far, and they call it left, which I'm not so sure that's what this is, because marginalized voices and issues have been brought too forward to the front. And they actually talked to me about Roe v. Wade. Now, this is a very bizarre thing because you mentioned this in what you just talked about. And what this particular person said to me was, they went too much into the issues for transgender people and Roe v. Wade. I said, hold on a second. And I said, what do you mean? She said, well, they should be talking about the economy. I said, you don't see how women being able to control their reproductive time period as an economic issue? And you know what, Walter? Roe v. Wade is the name of a piece of legislation. But it does not identify the things that A, you just spoke about, and B, that is an economic issue. So if you're going to talk about affordability, and you're going to talk about healthcare, and you're going to talk about housing, and you're going to talk about all of these economic issues, guess what? Roe v. Wade and being able to control your reproductive years and the time period for that, all of those issues, all of them, can be attached to that part of it. And this was an incredible, enlightening moment for me, because you know what that means? We're not telling the right story. We're not telling the right story about the access to that kind of care and those kind of decisions and how they relate to those basic 5 points, right? Healthcare, housing, economic. I mean, they talk about all of these items, and yet the case for women is not made clearly as attached to those different things, and nor are families. What do you think about this?
Oh, gosh, I'm writing a whole bunch of notes. And one of the things that always makes me really upset is we have to stand on integrity. We have to stand on our values. And that means we have to defend everybody. We have to defend the rights of all people. So whenever people start in with this, you're too woke, or you have to not worry about certain issues, I am not content to sacrifice anybody. And they're doing that based on fear. And fear is always the enemy here. They always want us to make it a choice between the lesser of two evils. And I think we have to demand actual decency and actual integrity. And I don't think that's too much to ask. And where we're at now is, I was along with the system as it went for all those years, right up until Election Day. And now after Election Day, when we lose again, and we're at this position of just what we've been facing over the last 10 months, it's like, it's clear we have to change a lot of our strategies. And you look at somebody like Zoran Mamdani, who both political entities were against. He defeated both the Democratic establishment and the Republicans. And he shows that if you just run on a platform of integrity, where you address actual values and you stand for all people, it's successful. And even now, major parts of the Democrats, they did not endorse him. And that is very offensive to me. We need to have our primaries. We need to be respectful of the primaries. And if a person wins who happens to be the head of a populist movement, that's what we have to support. And it's just really offensive, the amount of energy that seems to go into suppressing those people, because they're the ones that are clearly popular. And it's just, they keep misrepresenting what the American people want. They keep saying things like, we don't want a woman president, but we do. That is what we want. And it's what we don't want is a felon president who defiles the Constitution every day and who actively is working to hurt the American people. And we should be able to win this back pretty easy.
You know, what you're talking about winning back, and there are two things that you just mentioned that I want to just take apart a little bit. Part of the platform of the opposition's win has to do with putting women back in their place as property, and that men have power over them, and that they own them, and that the use is defined by men and by the men who have power. They're the ones who get to define what all of these things mean culturally. And when we look at the wins that just happened across the country, including what happened in New York City, but all the way across, so many women won their election, which seems to work exactly the opposite way of Michelle Obama's statement about we're not ready to be led by a female, because we're actually seeing that happen, and we're seeing it happen in big wave. And so what is this telling us? From my perspective, and I'm going to go out here on a limb because I've had this conversation repeatedly, had we given Ms. Harris us a little more time, she could have won that election, because in the popular way, she only lost, and this is after only 107 days, 1.5% loss in the vote. But let's look at this. In that moment in the campaign that she was running, she was redefining what a strong woman, what a woman looks like who could be a leader. And what was interesting about that, and this is where I wanted to go, it was a lot about the joyfulness was brought back into the campaign. And I think there's many campaigns where it's quite pedantic and very women are concerned with looking very professional, and they're certainly not going to go out on the dance floor. I saw Sherry Beasley when she was running for, I think she was running for Senate there, or judge, I forget. No, she was a judge, and she was running in I believe it was North Carolina. She came out, and she was singing a song. I think the joy, and putting the joy back in, is women coming to terms with defining what power in being a woman looks like versus the violence that underscores every definition that we're showed about masculinity. And that's where I'm going with this conversation with you, Walter, because you have written, and I've been reading you, many things about what it means to be a man, what it means to be the definition of masculine. I think you've had just a little bit of introspection on what that means to you. Can you talk a little bit about that to our listeners?
Absolutely. And I think what Harris would have offered that we're not getting is accountability. Accountability. And I just wish the whole Democratic establishment would start talking about this, because they just retreat. Because, you know, the regime that's in power right now, Republicans in general, conservatives, they never hold themselves accountable. According to them, it's always Biden's fault, or it's the immigrants' fault, or it's the LGBTQ plus community's fault. They never once take responsibility for anything. Me growing up, and it's taken years and years, because there's so much toxic masculinity that you're exposed to. It breaks my heart to think young men are looking at any of the Republicans today and thinking that's a model for manhood. These weak men who blame everybody else, who have only speak to women in terms of insults, and only look at them as objects. And over the years, having my daughters, and it's been my great privilege in life to be a girl dad. And just the way my wife handles things. And just, I know that I've grown a lot from the time I got married and to have these kids. And just that level of accountability. And it's at that point with my kids where if I do something wrong, I have to apologize to them. And that's just critical. That's something my dad never did to me. He never admitted a mistake. And you're going to wind up miserable and alone and despised if you are unable to practice accountability. But it doesn't fit in with the toxic patriarchy where these Republican men establish themselves as unquestionable deities. And anytime they're wrong, we're supposed to work around it. And they never acknowledge it. And they always blame somebody else. And that, to me, that's just the most essential form of weakness. And the more we get that message out there, we just say, hey, stop blaming Biden. What can you do different? You guys control every single lever of the government. You guys can change things overnight, and everything's only getting worse because all you do is blame others, and you never take responsibility for your own actions. And that's a pretty powerful argument.
I want to remind everyone that we're listening to Walter Ryan. This is The Joy of Democracy, and this segment of our show is called A Deeper Dive, and we're right here at United America Network. Now, Walter, I want to get a little more personal now because we know what the political scenario looks like, and we have talked about that power and how it looks in the United States and in America today. But how is it? What did you have growing up? How were you taught about what masculinity is?
Yep. And my mom, or I was born, I guess it was the year after women first were able to get a credit card in their name. So this is not that long ago. And I grew up in a small rural conservative town. And there's just this overwhelming pressure that the wife is just supposed to stay at home and she's never supposed to go out and work, not supposed to have jobs. But at the same time, then that builds this resentment. You see this everywhere where the husbands are just mad that it's their job to be the breadwinner. And it just doesn't make any sense. And that was my life growing up. That's pretty much gone away because they've destroyed the economy to the extent where both the husband and the wife have to be breadwinners now because a single earner household is just not possible anymore. It's just so upsetting when you say to people, it takes having kids where you're able to recognize the humanity of women. But that's not necessarily the case with me, but my children have taught me so much. And just unlearning all these things that we're taught, it's just part of our culture. It's up to our eyeballs, the dominance.
Talk about that culture of dominance. The threat of violence.
Yes.
Using violence as the definition of what it means to be a man. Talk to me a little bit about that.
It's just heartbreaking. It's heartbreaking that is such an emphasis where we only praise destruction and we never praise the people who build. And it takes so much longer to build something than it does to destroy it. So that's that misrepresentation. And I think it's just like growing up, I was always the kid, I like to read. When you're attacked instantly for that. And you're attacked for bettering yourself. A lot of this comes from the rural community type thing because there's pressure because these rural communities, they can't survive anymore and they know it. You know, that way of life is gone. You can't go back to 1895. It's just these rural communities are slowly, there's these encroachments. You have to learn these more difficult things. These small towns are dying. They're losing all their kids. When I was growing up, there was never any question. It was a town of 2,000 people. There was never any question that I would not leave this town. They knew they were going to lose us. They lose the brain power. And so then there's like a resentment. And even in the public school system, and I always like to emphasize, it's so tough in these rural communities. There's always a bunch of people who work really hard. When they gave me lifelines throughout the years, they were up against this. But you're in these communities that just don't respect education. They don't respect college. They don't respect advancement or doing anything that's not just being an indentured servant on the farm. And another thing that's misrepresented is how much those farm kids are. They suffer. They get into accidents because they're handling machinery they shouldn't be handling. So there's just so many problems. They all come out of that toxic masculinity.
We're seeing the past. We see what happens in the present. We see that the films and content and streaming content and series, it all supports a violence as part of the definition of masculinity. And the threat of that violence is what those in power use. We saw it immediately, people getting death threats if they speak out. bullies like Charlie Kirk are lauded as if he's accomplished something because he will debate. He never debated. A debate means you have to see someone else's point of view. We know that never happened. And if you do, it's considered a weakness. If you negotiate, it's considered a weakness. So what I'm hearing you say is the first vision, the first point in a vision for the definition of masculinity, what can young men look up to, is to be accountable and to establish a respect for those men who are accountable. What else would you say is part of that?
We have to have empathy. We have to develop strong relationships. And a story I told in an article recently, we were going to have a puppy. We wanted a puppy. And my dad said, well, you don't want that because then you'll just come to love it and the puppy will die. And this was just as, I'm just like, oh my gosh, it's like that control. It all stems from fear though. The patriarchal mindset, they're all terrified. They clench onto things so hard that those things slip through their fingers is what the reality is. And it is tragic too, what we're seeing among this whole MAGA movement, because all they've done is we hear all these stories, these daughters don't talk to their MAGA fathers anymore. And at some point, these guys are so invested into these toxic hate ideologies. Then they get themselves built up. Their identity becomes who they can physically dominate. It's like, I'm well aware at age 50, I'm past my physical prime. And it's all the threat again, that fear mentality. They want to, the promise that there will be repercussions if you defy these people. And now that's what we're seeing in this regime, because the regime is looking weaker and weaker. It started with the Jimmy Kimmel episode where that Jimmy Kimmel came on the air despite the intentions of the regime. So now more and more people are waking up to the fact that this regime is all bluster and no bite, like all bullies are. All bullies are that way. And the motto of the bully really explains a lot of what's going on today.
So we have the accountability, right? We have developing or accepting or cultivating empathy, because what you're basically doing is talking about the character and the vision of how we can broaden, how we can have a vision for the future for young men to look at, and being able to articulate how you feel, learning what that means, understanding. Yeah. And I think what you hit was really an important thing, and that was looking at relationships and that relationships have value and they're not just transactional moments to get from point A to point B. And I think that is going to the heart of what you're talking about.
Absolutely. And it's so much of my transformation, it came from having children. And I remember bringing the babies home and you look at them and you're just like, there's no evil here in this beautiful face. There's no evil there. So I better get my act together. Because all these things are taught. Hate is taught and racism is taught. And I reject this idea that all people are sinners. I don't think that's true. I think people are born good and they learn hate. And you see these relationships where people, they're frustrated with their teenage kids and their kids are sarcastic. And it's, they're sarcastic because you're sarcastic. And that's where the accountability comes in. But it all comes down to the fear where people get so afraid of the things that they're going to lose. And we just have to accept the world is what it is. We have to go forward unapologetically fighting for our sense of integrity and decency. We can't make these deals with the devil for fear of something worse happening, because you've already made that concession. A small act of evil is still an act of evil. So the more we just embrace our courage, we embrace integrity, we love people without expecting anything in return. We see the good in people without teaching them evil. Good things happen.
That brings us to the end of this episode, but I just want to say, loving and doing things for others without expecting a return, this is a lesson. And I hear you saying, not so different than what Michelle Obama said, because I'm going to go back to my theme here. I think we still have a lot of growing to do in that regard. And it is up to us to grow up so that we can hold that vision for the generations to come. Walter Ryan, I appreciate you on this show today. Thank you for joining me on The Joy of Democracy. And we are here at United America Network. See you again soon, I hope, Walter.
I hope so too. Thank you so much.